Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I am joined today for a discussion of the remake of Carrie.
Yeah, it's more faithful to the novel, fucker.
Everyone's gonna laugh at Adam Riske.
To the devil with false modesty, Patrick. Because who doesn't say that in high school?
You voted for yourself.
Yes.
You can find our website at fthismovie.net, where you can find every episode of our podcast, not just the ones that are on iTunes, but you can also find us in the iTunes store. You should follow us on Twitter. We're at fthismovie. And you can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/fthismovie, and email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Scary Movie Month, still in full swing.
You guys are doing a great job with the comments.
Yes. Absolutely. It's kicking ass. We're definitely going to get to our goal of over 1,000 for the Scary Movie Challenge. If you don't know about it, go to fthismovie.net. Every time you watch a scary movie in October, leave a 7-word review for what you watched. Again, our goal was to hopefully get to over 1,000, maybe to 1,500. We can make it. We've got about 11 days left in October, and we're somewhere in the 800s, I believe.
Yeah, and they've all been really funny and clever, and I've been really enjoying reading them, so keep them coming.
Should we read some of them?
I would love to.
Okay, I'll let you go first so I can find some to read.
All right. I'm not one of those people who likes to wait last for the best one, so I'm going to read my favorite one right off the top.
All right.
The entire month is from Kevin Quatman on the original Hellraiser, which was Overweight Albino Morpheus is my favorite Hellraiser, which is phenomenal because I've just been watching the first two Hellraisers for the first time because I've been dreading Hellraiser for a while. And I'll talk to them, the what have you been watching. But that one so looks like a fat albino Morpheus.
I knew exactly who he meant when I read that.
It was great.
Michael Henley says of the ABCs of Death, Adam Riske's favorite movie of the year, M's for maybe watch something else instead.
Nice. I like that one too. Michael Piccoli of 13 Ghosts from 2001 said, yeah, I saw it on AMC again, which is awesome because I have a ghost ship problem with AMC. I think I've seen that movie.
I gotta say though,
3 or 4 times.
I'm so happy that, is it Fear Fest now?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm so happy that that's going on because that's just my default. Like if I turn the TV on, it goes right to AMC.
Yeah.
And I feel like they've mixed it up a little bit this year. Mm-hmm. I've been seeing some stuff that they haven't shown before. It used to just be Halloween, Halloween 4, Halloween 5, and some Friday the 13th, right?
Yeah, and I'm glad that it seems like they got all their Walking Dead out of the way right off the top, because I am not a Walking Dead fan, and I don't want them taking my Fear Fest space.
No, thank goodness. This was the year that I bailed on Walking Dead. Okay. I've stuck it with it for three seasons, and this year I said, no more!
That movie has some kind of... that show has like this weird cult of fandom that I don't understand.
People love it. Tom Maloney says of Aftershock, my favorite movie of this year, Vacation costs an arm and a leg. Boom.
Steve K of the People Under the Stairs, which if you haven't watched it yet, you should watch it and you should comment on it in the Scary Movie Month Club.
Yes.
Because it's, you might not love it, but it's definitely interesting, so you should check it out. But Steve K did check it out, so I'm going to reward him with reading his very funny Marcellus Fares Somewhat Worse Against the Gimp.
Sal Ott says, Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters. Who wouldn't want to eat Gemma Arterton?
Graphic, but yeah.
I have to agree. I'm not a fan of the Gemma Arterton, but in that movie, I'm a fan of the Gemma Arterton.
You had a good one about that, about sugar sickness and how she gives it to you.
Oh, she does give me the sugar sickness, yes.
Yeah, God, man, she's adorable in that movie.
She's all right.
All right. Yeah, you're going to learn today. Tom Bartman of John Carpenter's Vampires. Haha, but really, whose vampires are these? I thought that one was great.
I'll read this one, and I don't even know how to say it. Calorith, sure, because that's somebody new. VHS, not as bad as Patrick's review said. Now, I don't know what they're referring to, because we did a podcast on VHS last year, and I was the positive one about that movie. I found things to say that were nice about that movie.
You were more complimentary than JB, but from when I listened to the show, I'll go with Calorith.
All right. Was I super negative?
You weren't super negative, but you didn't sound like you liked it on the whole.
So I think that's a fair. All right.
But you know what? I mean, like, you guys can just, you know, high five, have a beer over it.
Oh, yeah, fine. No, we're not fighting.
Yeah, don't fight.
Me and Calarith are pretty tight.
Yeah, good. Good. All right, I got another one from Mike Young of my beloved House of the Devil. Warning, consuming satanic pizza can cause pregnancy.
Didn't you have a review like that? Like, don't eat the pizza a long time ago?
I had one, yeah, like, don't eat the pizza, which...
There was more than that, because that's not seven words. But I remember yours having to do with pizza.
I added letters. So
yeah. Neil Harper says of Puppet Master, fairly certain Toy Stories based on this.
Which is great. Did you watch the Toy Story of Terror?
I completely forgot that it was on, okay. And so I did not. Was it good?
I haven't seen it yet. I have on my DVR.
I feel terrible because I should have DVR'd it for my son. He would have liked it.
You could just show him Puppet Master, because yeah, apparently it's
good,
the same.
Good point. Good point.
Yeah.
He's a fan of the Charles Band.
Uh-huh. Well, who is not? Okay, Luke Ciancio of... maybe my least favorite movie of the year, Room 237. A fucking Minotaur? Really? A fucking Minotaur?
Give me a second. I'll have to cut out this pause. Son of a bitch. Gabby Farrow says of Carnival of Souls, what Antonioni's horror film would look like, and I have two things to say about that. I know you and her have been talking a little bit about Carnival of Souls in the comments for your column, which was great. Everybody should read that and watch Carnival of Souls. I also have really been enjoying Gabby Farrow's, a lot of her seven-word reviews read like mini haiku. Okay. they're so interesting to read, because a lot of people go for the joke. She doesn't. She goes for, like, abstract imagery, which is great.
I think that's great, too. She's the prom queen of F This Movie.
I believe so.
So, congratulations. You won me over when you made a point of tweeting that I should read your comment on Carnival of Souls, which I read, and it was great, and now I have a recommendation of an Antonioni or Antonioni film, so I'm looking forward to it, yeah. Shannon Briggs of the People Under the Stairs, Wendy Roby freaks me the fuck out, which is great. I never saw her on Twin Peaks, so I always described her and Everett McGill in that movie as David Byrne and Patrick Swayze from Tu Wong Fu.
Wow, interesting. Yeah, the David Byrne thing I get.
Yeah.
Erica was watching People Under the Stairs with me yesterday, and she didn't believe that Wendy Roby was a woman.
I can see that.
She seemed to think it was a man in drag.
Yeah.
The Wick says of Psycho 2, handy to have another mother laying around.
Very good. Saul Ott of Child's Play, alley bums always have the best toys.
A lot of people zeroing in on the hobo aspect of Child's Play.
Yeah.
Which I appreciate. Brad Lang from Australia, our friend, says of the People Under the Stairs, that Craven writes black folks deaf, yo. Which I had forgotten. I had forgotten until rewatching People Under the Stairs how embarrassing some of Wes Craven's approximation of ghetto speak is.
I love how they have Bill Cobb on hand as the old-timey gentleman from the neighborhood.
And he just knows everything about valuable coins.
Yeah, he's just like, well, there's two things that I love about that scene is he apparently Fool has the perfect amount of gold coins for rent for 9 years and his mama's operation.
Right. a cancer removal surgery.
Yeah. And they're going to go to the good coin collector. He's like, I'm going to take these to a good coin collector. Like,
there's some bad coin collectors in town.
It's like, I'll steer you clear of those.
Yeah.
Find the good one.
Yeah.
You got any more?
I got one more from Stuart P. Friday 13th Part 2. Hot dogs more important than real dogs.
Nice. Very funny. And I'll drop this last one on you. Right. JP of Prince of Darkness, Bug, Satanic Jizz, and Homeless Alice Cooper. Which is a great description of some of the myriad of delights that Prince of Darkness
has. That's a crazy movie. Just don't watch it at like 5 in the morning after watching 10 other movies.
Correct. Yeah. Because
that's rough.
Mm-hmm.
But it's out on Blu-ray from Scream Factory, and I hope to get it.
Awesome.
Yeah. So anyway, great job, everybody. We are enjoying reading these, and please keep posting. We'll keep reading them on the podcast in the weeks to come. There's only about 2 weeks left in October. We have a couple more podcasts left. So
it's flown by.
Yeah, it really has. This has actually been a really, really fun October. I've really been enjoying it. So that's awesome. Adam, have you seen anything scary lately?
Yeah, I have. All right, the first thing that I wanted to talk about was you rewatched Sleepwalkers, which you talked about briefly on the podcast last week on the Massacre Show.
Yes.
I rewatched it too, and, but all right, I'll get out of the way. First off, Machen Amick, oh my God, in 1992. Like, she, I think Ty West, before he did House of the Devil, saw the Machen Amick dance. And told Jocelyn Donahue, he's like, I want you to watch the Machen Amick dance, yeah. And then I want you to do that
all right,
for my
so,
movie.
Machen Amick, 1993, Jocelyn Donahue.
Yeah.
Which way do you go?
Oh, boy. You have to go with
Sophie's
Amick. I'm going
really?
With Amick.
Oh, my yeah. gosh.
Sorry.
I got Jocelyn. Yelled at by Doug and Mike because I was way more about Alice Krieg in that movie than I was about Machen Amick, and
that's
I got yelled
insane.
At. I got yelled at.
That's insane.
I just want her to be my mom.
Apparently, yeah. You want to, like, hump the Borg.
Yeah.
So good for you.
Yeah, I want her to assimilate me.
Well, that's sexual. All right. Sleepwalkers is a ridiculous movie,
mm-hmm.
but it knows that it's a ridiculous movie.
Exactly.
It's got that great song from La Bamba that plays like 30 times.
La Bamba?
Yeah. No, you know what? I forgot
Sleepwalk.
What it's called.
Thank it's you. Called Sleepwalk.
Shut up. It's called Sleepwalk?
Yeah.
Damn it.
That guitar one? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's called Sleepwalk.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, you learn something new every day.
Yeah.
But I remembered liking it when I was a kid, and then I hadn't seen it since I was about 10 or 11 years old, and when I rewatched it, I was like, with it for about a half hour, and I'm like, why did I like this so much as a kid? And then Sheriff Andy showed up with
yeah.
Clovis the Cat.
Yeah.
And then I completely remembered why I liked that movie. If you've seen Sleepwalkers, you know what I'm talking about. There's an introduction of a state trooper named Sheriff Andy, and he's got a cat named Clovis, and he's hanging a ball over Clovis's face, and he's just like, get the bad guy, get the bad guy, and then he goes, get that motherfucker! And everything that comes out of his mouth for the next 40 minutes is gloriously wonderful.
Yeah, no, I watched that a week ago, and then I watched People Under the Stairs this weekend, and both came out in 93,
mm-hmm.
and I remembered that I was dating a girl in 93 who was older than me and drove, and maybe I didn't. I can't remember, but I made her go see both of those movies, and she did not like when I picked the movies because she hated both of those movies, and I, of course, liked them both. So
it was not a match made in heaven.
No, clearly not.
It wasn't just like heaven.
As much as I say that the 90s were not great for horror, both of those movies came out in 93.
Yeah, I don't think Sleepwalkers was universal, but I'm noticing from, like, People Under the Stairs and Demon Night and Child's Play stuff, that Universal, like, really was pro-horror in the 90s.
Yeah, for a little... Well, yeah. Yeah, the Child's Play sequels, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, Sleepwalkers was Sony, Columbia, TriStar, whatever.
Yeah, it's a good one to throw in. Like, if you're... I've been watching kind of a good mixture of lighthearted horror and kind of more dark horror. And, like, Sleepwalkers is a good palate cleanse if you've seen something a little bit too rough.
All right.
Which will segue into my next movie. I caught at the Music Box of Horrors, which I attended, and I'll write more about than I'll talk about right now. I saw Possession.
Yes.
Which is a French movie, I think, or German movie from...
I think he's Polish, the filmmaker, and I'm not going to attempt his name.
Yeah, and I'm not going to attempt the lead actress's name because I think it's Isabella Gianni.
Yeah, Gianni.
I hope that's right. And Sam Neill is in it, and the whole movie is supposed to be an allegory for divorce.
Right.
And it is, and I'm not trying to be hyperbolic, it is one of the weirdest movies I've ever seen in my life. It's like Naked Lunch weird, where you don't know what to think while you're watching it. And the entire audience I saw it with, which was probably 300, 400 people at that point, were just completely in silence, gasping, did not know what to make of this movie. And I still don't really know what to make of it. It's super well made. It's one of those movies where you give all kinds of credit to the actors because they really earn their paychecks on that one.
Right.
I mean, it looks emotionally and physically draining.
Yeah.
A lot of the stuff they're doing. But like, I came out of it just complete. My 7-word review for it was, I need to be cheered up immediately or something like that. It is really impressive, but just anticipate that you're going to be kind of shook up by it.
Yeah, that was, it's a hard movie to come by because it's not available on DVD. Turner Classic Movies showed it a couple years ago, mm-hmm. and one of our listeners sort of did a DVR alert, like, check this out if you haven't seen it. So I did, mm-hmm. and I have the same reaction. Like, I can appreciate the movie, but it's not a movie that I can say that I like.
Yeah.
And do you think that's why Dr. Alan Grant hates children?
It's got to be.
Yeah.
It's got to be. Yeah, because why else wouldn't you have a kid with Laura Dern?
Exactly.
By the way, I didn't mention this
93.
One. Dern 93.
Boom.
I didn't mention this when
Sleepwalkers,
we were talking
People
about...
People on the Stairs, Jurassic Park.
What is going on?
93 was a
What is going on?
Starting to sense a trend for next year's at this movie fest.
Yeah, and I was this prepubescent boy at, going to the pool every night, and I had desires. I didn't talk about this one. I think it was on the Evil Dead podcast when we were talking about Jurassic Park. But just real quick, that scene in Jurassic Park 3D where, like, Laura Dern is walking up the hill with Sam Neill at the excavation
3D Dern
site.
Butt.
I wanted to jump through the screen and tackle her down the hill, and I'd be like, you're going to love me forever.
I had some 3D Dern butt response during Gravity.
What?
There's some 3D.
Oh, to Sandra B.
Sandy
Butts.
Sandy B. And some some hot pants.
Yeah.
Some astronaut hot pants.
Oh, man.
Anyway, what else?
I saw Escape from Tomorrow, which I was teetering on. I'm like, is this really horror? I don't know. But it is very similar in the last half hour. They're going for a David Lynch Eraserhead type vibe, so I think it qualifies.
All right,
because I don't know how else to categorize it, but I don't get the reviews for it. It's been very mixed.
Right,
I can kind of understand a little bit why it's mixed, but I think that the people who are reviewing it are completely missing the point of the movie. A lot of people are kind of commenting on it being a takedown of Disney or some kind of takedown of the artificiality of the happiness that is going on there. But I didn't see it that way. I saw it as Disney is, it represents, you know, a place to be happy, but it's more taking down the people who go to Disney who are miserable, horrible people who expect Disney to cure all of their problems.
Right.
And I think that it plays as kind of an inverse of It's a Wonderful Life. It's almost like It's a Terrible Life. And but it was losing me, and then in the last half hour, there's a really subtle part, about two thirds of the way in. It's right after the movie takes a twist, and you'll know it when you see it. But they show something that makes the movie's message to me seem a lot more hopeful.
Okay.
And it's kind of becomes like a cautionary tale.
Okay.
And I really loved it. I don't think that it's a success from a filmmaking standpoint altogether, because it's very kind of amateur and like slapped together, but a lot of interesting ideas and definitely worth watching.
All right.
So
it's available on demand, right?
That's how I watched it. I watched it on demand. And then lastly, I saw the first two Hellraiser movies.
Oh, right.
And I was avoiding them for a really long time because I thought they were just going to be kind of gory freak shows. And I was surprised by, you know, when they have their gore shots, they really go for it.
It's tough to take.
Yeah. It is tough to take, but it's well paced out. Mm-hmm. I think that it's much more patient than I thought that they would be.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a lot of humor out of it. I thought they were really funny, especially how bad the Cenobites are at negotiating. Like, Ashley Lawrence can talk them out of anything.
It's Ashley Lawrence.
That's true, but it reminded me of the scene in Mean Girls where Tim Meadows is like, I will keep you here all night. And they're like, you can only keep him here till 4. And he's like, I will keep you here till 4. That's Pinhead's negotiated style.
Yeah.
Hellraiser 2, I think I liked more than Hellraiser 1.
Really?
Just because of how nuts it gets.
Boy, does it.
It's definitely a movie where it feels like they took the script, threw it in the air, and just said, we've got a lot of cool things to put the camera on, and let's just make a 90-minute movie of it.
I need to see Hellraiser 2 again. I've only seen it once or twice.
Yeah.
And I remember being really impressed by not that I've ever, like, pictured what hell looks like, but I remember the way that that movie represents hell, I felt like, well, that's a very different take on hell.
Yeah, I haven't seen hell quite like that.
Right.
If you rewatch it, I want to get your opinion on, there's, like, a mute teenager that's part of it.
Yeah.
I think she looks exactly like Brad Pitt in Interview with a Vampire. So if you watch it again, let me know.
All right,
if you
I will. Fan. I remember the character that you're talking about, and I'm not an Interview with the Vampire fan.
Okay, I'm okay on it.
The thing about Hellraiser is that it's not, like, super gory, but it just always feels like it is, even when it's not. There's this weird, sick feeling of, like, oh, there's going to be violence at any minute.
It's pretty icky.
Yeah, I'm a fan of both of those movies, but I tend to like the first one better. I do need to see the second one
again. Have you seen 3 or 4?
Yes.
Should I just cut bait?
Oh, definitely stop. Okay. Definitely stop right now. I know I've seen 3, because that's the girl from Deep Space Nine, and crazy violent. People get, like, beheaded by CDs and stuff. It's real stupid. And then I've seen one other one, and I don't know which one it is.
Okay.
It's in space, and there's flashbacks to, like, Victorian England, and Adam Scott is in it, and, but don't see that one either.
No.
So, okay. I think you're good after 1 and 2. All Others right. may disagree with me. I saw the remake of Maniac.
Okay.
Which is on Netflix Instant.
I am halfway through it.
Okay.
He just met a French girl, and I think things are going to work out.
It definitely picks up after that. I don't know how I feel about it. It's an interesting experiment, because the whole thing, if you guys don't know, Elijah Wood sort of plays the main character, but what you don't know is that he's only on camera every once in a while, because it's all done point of view. It's all first person point of view. So if the main character looks into a mirror, they find a lot of excuses for him to look at himself, and so that you say, hey, there's Elijah Wood. The point of view experiment is interesting, but I don't know that I cared for the movie on the whole.
It's got, of the half hour or so that I've seen of it, I mean, it's tough to sustain interest in that kind of conceit, because it just seems to be on repeat already at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I guess once he meets the French girl, it changes a little bit, but not that much.
Okay.
I saw a movie called The Divide, which came out a year or two ago. It was directed by Xavier Gens. Yeah.
Is he the Silent Hill guy?
Is he?
I think he did maybe one of the Silent Hill.
Okay.
I've only seen the first one.
Yeah, I have not seen either. And I thought he made a movie called Inside, maybe? I don't know. He did one of the segments in ABCs of Death that is actually, I think, effective, but horrible. It's the overweight girl who's unhappy with her appearance.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, like, one of the most disturbing things ever.
Yeah, but I agree with you. It's one of the better segments.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it's horrible. But, gosh, I don't know. It's about a group of people who survive an atomic blast or a nuclear blast.
Okay.
And they're locked together in this bomb shelter. It's Rosanna Arquette. It's Lauren German from Hostel 2. It's your boy, Milo Ventimiglia. It's Michael Biehn.
Yeah.
And it's just one of these things where it's like, how ugly can people get if they're cooped together? And how awful can they be to one another?
Yeah.
It's very beautifully shot. The acting is fine. But it's one of those things where it's like, boy, I'm getting numb after this much ugliness.
Yeah. Is it on Netflix Instant?
It's not.
Okay.
It was for a time, I think, or maybe it was on demand, like through FearNet or something.
Okay.
And it might still be. I mean, if you're a horror fan looking for something a little bit different, it might be worth a watch, but I don't know how much I would say people should really check it out, you know? I forget what the last movie I was going to talk about is. So let's go right into our discussion of Carrie, the remake by Kimberly Pierce, because everybody's excited to hear this. You know, I think the larger sort of parts of Carrie will be spoiled in this, because it follows the original pretty closely, and I feel comfortable spoiling a movie that's almost 40 years old. However, I think some of the maybe specific differences we can wait and talk about at the end.
Sure.
Unless it becomes impossible to talk about, because I don't know how much I have to say except for about the specific differences.
Yeah. There's plenty of comparison notes to talk about.
But I feel like that's going to be what it is until I say, like, oh, and then it departs in these three ways, which I would consider spoilers, but I may have to just talk about those. So we'll give plenty of warning. Mm-hmm. But, okay, I was not really looking forward to this movie based on the marketing, because the marketing to me made it look like almost a shot-for-shot remake of De Palma's original movie.
Yes.
I'm not the world's biggest remake fan on principle. However, there have been plenty of good ones to justify another one. And I think maybe there's something there. You know, I like the original a lot. There's been some discussion at our website lately about the original, I think, because you had recommended it in Netflix.
No, JB did, and then Heath wrote a really nice column about Piper Laurie's performance.
So there's been some conversation about the original Carrie, and some people don't think it holds up. And even in some comment threads of some other website reviews for the movie, I've heard people say, oh, I don't like the original, De Palma sucks, I don't like all his technique, and blah, blah, blah. I'm a Brian De Palma fan, I'm a huge fan of the original movie. So, however, I did try to go into this with as open a mind as possible, because I think maybe you could say something current about bullying. Kimberly Pierce is an interesting choice for a director. I liked the casting of Julianne Moore on paper. I was less thrilled about the casting of Chloe Grace Moretz, and not for the reason that everybody says, which
is... pretty!
She's too pretty!
Yeah.
How could anyone possibly pick on her? She's, you know, pretty. My issue is more that my jury is still out on her as an actress.
Interesting.
Okay. I've seen her be good in stuff. I liked her in the first Kick-Ass, you know, enough. She fit the part. I liked her in Let Me In. But then I've seen her in stuff like Hugo, where I thought she was not very good.
Yeah, she doesn't have a... She's really modern, so putting her in maybe kind of a period
Her accent was problematic. Yeah. I didn't think she was great. I didn't like her in Kick-Ass 2, but I didn't like anything in Kick-Ass 2. So I didn't know how to feel. And then the marketing comes out, and it really does look like the exact same movie. Let's start... with your reaction, though, to Carrie 2013.
Okay, so we don't have to call it Carrie and Carrie 2013.
Yes.
Let's call it Carrie. The 1976 version is Carrie.
Okay.
The 2013 version, and this will kind of summarize how I felt about the movie in a certain way, I'm calling it X-Men Origins Carrie.
Okay.
Because...
But you're a huge fan of X-Men Origins Wolverine, so I can only assume that you loved the new Carrie?
Well, I want to know how he got his leather jacket. So that's important to me.
Should we call it New Carrie?
New Carrie.
Carrie and New Carrie?
Yeah, New Carrie.
The Rage Carrie remake?
Jeez, I haven't seen that, thank goodness.
I almost would say it's better than New Carrie, but maybe not.
I don't know.
It's basically
a remake of Carrie. I heard in the Rage Carrie 2 that... Mina Suvari died horribly, and I'm a Mina
Pretty
Suvari...
Pretty early on.
I was a Mina Suvari fan at the time, and I couldn't handle that. So
I have a bigger issue with The Rage Carry 2. Can I spoil it?
Sure.
Spoilers for The Rage Carry 2, which came out in 98.
Is it because they kill the kid from Home Improvement?
No, I was fine with that. It's because they kill Amy Irving. They bring back Amy Irving Snell? As Sue Snell.
What?
And then, like, impale her on some... sharp shit. I don't remember, but
fuck that.
I'm not a fan, and we've talked about this on the website before. When you bring back old characters who survive previous horror movies, don't do it just to kill them off, unless there's some major reason. I know you're a fan of a particular development in Scream 2.
Yes.
I think there are ways to do it that, yes, perhaps raise the stakes, but to have Sue Snell survive for years and then bring her back to kill her in shitty Rage Carry 2, to me, was kind of an F you.
Yeah. I think the Scream 2 thing, not to get off on a digression, it came a year after the original Scream, so it wasn't you had that long, festering thing. And then also him, this person getting killed off in that movie kind of... made it feel like, wow, anybody could die in this
And
movie.
Also, Scream 2 is kind of good.
I really like Scream 2.
Right, and there's a difference when, like, when you're making The Rage Carry 2, which isn't very good, you haven't earned the right to kill a beloved character.
Right. Okay, so real quick, I love the original De Palma movie.
Yes.
I'm a huge fan of it. I've always liked it. I like it more as I get older because I find it even scarier as an adult than I did as a preteen when I saw it originally. The new Carrie didn't even feel like a horror movie to me most of the time. And then when it did get the horror elements in there, it felt shoehorned in.
Okay.
And way too many special effects.
Yeah.
And I think that, just kind of circle back to what you were saying about Chloe Grace Moretz, I am a fan of hers. I think she's maybe a more charismatic actress than a good actress.
Okay. I can see that.
But I think that she makes a choice with Carrie, which is to make her very sympathetic.
Mm-hmm.
And it works to the detriment of the movie.
Interesting. How
so? Because I didn't believe that she would put up with the abuse that she would, because she seems almost like Amy from Shailene Woodley's character from The Spectacular Now.
Okay.
Where she's a good person, but just has a really rough home life.
Right.
And I didn't believe that she wouldn't go to the police at some point and be like, my mom is locking me in closets and hitting me in the face with Bibles. Because she seemed to not need a lot of twisting of her arm to be kind of normal. Whereas Sissy Spacek is not, at no point in the movie do you feel like she's a normal high school teenage girl.
Right.
Even at the prom when she's with Tommy and she's having a good time, she is really kind of meek and you're on edge a little bit. You know who I think, and this is kind of playing fantasy baseball with Carrie, but since we just were talking about the people under the stairs recently, I think you need to make Carrie be like Alice from the people under the stairs.
Okay.
That's what that girl would look like in 2013.
Okay.
Whereas Chloe Grace Moretz, I think she tries to play it too sympathetic. So because of that, you are, one of the great things about the original Carrie is you really never get a sense of how to feel about her. I never really completely crossed the line into sympathizing with her because I felt like she was very dangerous.
Sure.
And I never felt that way with Chloe Grace Moretz. I think that in the De Palma movie, he very wisely takes her telekinetic powers and makes it be kind of parallel to her being learning about her body and like post-pubescent changes that are going on, or like just the temperaments of a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with Chloe Grace Moretz in this Carrie, I felt like she was always in control of her telekinetic abilities.
Right.
She
and really kind of liked it.
Kind of liked it. Yeah. It's like, this is my cool chosen one thing.
Right.
And I think it just completely doesn't fit this movie.
And that's
the story.
Right.
Yeah.
Again, I go back and forth because I'm trying so hard not to just say, oh, I don't like this because it's not what the De Palma movie did.
Yeah.
But
it's tough to do that,
though. I know. It really is. And maybe with a little bit of time or distance, maybe I'll appreciate it more. But again, the movie does that thing, which is to constantly remind us of the De Palma movie.
Mm-hmm.
More than one person has said, oh, this one is more faithful to the book. And I know you kind of joked about that opening
in
the podcast.
I think that's kind of cheap.
I've read the book. Yeah. It's been a while.
Yeah.
So I don't feel comfortable saying, like, yeah, this is definitely more faithful to the book.
I've read the book, too. So if you want to say stuff, I can check mark it for you.
Yeah, I don't know. What in this movie is more faithful to the book?
That Sue was pregnant.
Okay.
And that instead of the boy, that's spoilerish.
Okay.
But I'll wait on that one. But that's basically it.
That Sue's pregnant.
Yeah, that Sue's pregnant.
Okay.
That's basically it.
There just wasn't anything that really jumped out at me as saying, like, oh, this justifies. Because usually when a movie, you know, that's based on something beloved, is remade, it's always like, no, we're going back to the book and we're being much more faithful.
Yeah.
You're trying to justify why you're making this movie again. And so had they gone back and really been faithful to the book, maybe even in that structure, that weird, almost like police report structure, perhaps that would have justified the movie's existence because it to me, it goes out of its way to redo stuff from the De Palma movie, including the famous getting ready for prom sequence.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people point to.
Which is bad in the original Carrie.
Right.
I'm a fan of the original Carrie.
And it doesn't even bother me. I mean, it's super weird and silly.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that people point to as, hey, that movie's dated or that movie's bad.
Yeah.
They do it in this movie. They do the getting ready for prom sequence in this movie.
And did you notice that the guys getting fitted for tuxes with Tommy looked like they were about 30 years old?
It's very strange. Well, everybody in the De Palma movie looks 32. The guy that played Tommy, I thought was okay.
Okay.
I thought he did, he had a weird approach.
All right, I gotta stop there.
Okay.
If I could name one good thing about this movie, it would be, and I wrote down the actor's name because I want
to. I'll just keep calling him the guy that played Tommy.
I know he's listening, and I need to let him know what is his name. Okay. All right, me and Patrick have a joke about, like,
awful names.
Yeah, awful names for actors. Something terrible happened in the late 90s when parents were naming their children. Ansel Elgort. So
is he going to be on with Kylie Bunbury?
Kylie Bunbury. No, he. I know of him from that review show, Sinskull and Elgort. He's really good.
When you started that, I really was like, this guy's done other stuff?
Yeah, he's on a movie review show.
Sinskull and Elgort.
Sinskull and Elgort. All right. This kid, you're going to be a star. Listen, I think he's got some kind of, like, weird Channing Tatum meets Patrick Wilson thing going. To have either of those separate is good. Together, you got the world on a string.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell it is, but, like, yeah, his approach is very weird.
It's weird.
He blows anybody off the screen in every scene that he's in because he's just interesting.
Yeah.
And he plays it in ways that you wouldn't expect at all.
Right.
He doesn't have kind of the, like William Cat in the original is kind of goofy.
Yeah.
And Tommy in this one seems to be like a guy you would want to be best friends with and you could completely understand why every girl would love.
Right.
And he just kind of nails it. And I don't know. I just, that part of the, whenever he was in the movie, I'm like, I'm fine with this.
He kind of avoids the genericness of a lot of the other kind of WB cast, know, everybody does feel Sue Snell,
who looks 11 feet tall
and but is just very, it's like, we found this pretty blonde to play Sue Snell, but like, she's just super generic.
Yeah. The girl who they picked to play Chris Hargensen, too. Another problem with it is she's a weird-looking girl. She's like an orange Lady Gaga.
She was orange, right? Yeah. That wasn't just me?
No.
I thought something was up.
No, she's an orange Lady Gaga. Yeah. And, like, they're making fun of Chloe Grace Moretz, who's got, like, she's, like, off-pretty, like, Christina Ricci's off pretty. It's like, you know she's pretty.
Right.
But Orange Gaga's taken over the school.
Right. It was nice that they brought back Hart Bachner to play her dad, though, because I just kept waiting for him to pull a Hans. Yeah. Booby. I don't even know how we got off on
you
this.
You do it with a fountain pen, I do it with a cell phone. Am I right?
I don't even remember how we got off on this tangent. Just, I guess we could talk about the acting as
Let's talk about Julianne Moore.
I didn't think she was very good.
I thought she was bad.
I thought she approached the role. Oh, you had talked about the dynamic between Carrie and her mom and Carrie's confidence, and I absolutely agree with you that she did seem very modern, very confident, and I thought that that was one of the areas that the movie was sort of different, was that the relationship between her and her mom was different than the one in the original, but you're absolutely right. It doesn't necessarily make sense for this material because Julianne Moore definitely seemed to be much more in fear of Carrie, pretty early on, once the powers start manifesting.
Well, it was inconsistent, because there'd be scenes where, they're talking about how Carrie's mom is going to come to the school to pick her up after she has her period.
Right.
And you can tell that that Carrie is scared of her mom.
Right.
And she won't get out, and she says, when they get back to the house, Carrie's mom's like, get in the house. And Carrie says, no, I'm not going in the house with you. And that's, for somebody who's abused, it's probably pretty likely that's how they would answer to something like that. But then there's a lot of points where Carrie seems like she pities her mom. Like, she's like, look at this outdated, crazy woman who doesn't know any better. And it doesn't vibe at all. Whereas there's one scene in the original Carrie that it's unbelievable. Is and somebody commented on this. I forgot who it was in one of maybe in the Piper Laurie column that Heath wrote. There's a scene where Carrie mentions that Tommy asked her to the prom,
right?
And then Piper Laurie throws coffee at Carrie's face,
mm-hmm.
and it extinguishes a flame. And it's symbolic because it's like whatever light is in her life is immediately extinguished,
right.
like that.
Right.
But that also just was like, no, this is their relationship. Like, outside of symbolism, this is their relationship. Like, this isn't something that just happened once. This happens all the time. It is nothing for this woman to throw coffee in her child's face.
Right.
This is the abuse dynamic that's going on.
Right.
Whereas with Julianne Moore, she plays it much more, I guess, realistically. It's mm-hmm. not as, like, I read that Piper Laurie thought that the script for the original Carrie was a satire of a horror movie. So she played it to the hilt. And I think that works for the material
mm-hmm.
because it's so extreme and it makes it more frightening. And the way she shot is more extreme. So it's in line with her performance.
Right.
But yeah, everything with Julianne Moore's choices are maybe more realistic, but they're also less threatening and they're more vanilla.
Right. Well, and this is what I'm struggling with because yeah. they do try, and both her and Chloe Moretz do try and sort of play it more contemporary. They're not yeah. just necessarily doing imitations of Sissy Spacek and Piper Laurie.
Yeah.
So, okay, fine. But, you know, it's not just that I don't think it works for Carrie, or it's not just that I'm saying, oh, it doesn't work because it's not what they did in the De Palma movie. I don't think I'm struggling with that.
Yeah.
I don't think it necessarily works just as a standalone movie. It doesn't totally make sense. And in order to really process that, you have to put the original movie out of your head, and that's hard to do. You know, I don't necessarily think that New Carrie is a terrible movie
mm-hmm.
if you've never seen De Palma's Carrie.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think it's a good movie. I don't think it necessarily works, but I don't think it's total garbage the way that I think there are some other horror movie remakes that whether or not they ever made a first movie, this is bad.
Yeah.
I don't think that's true of Carrie. It's just one of these instances where you have to ask why. What was the point? What is, yeah. aside from getting new viewers, young viewers who have no familiarity with the De Palma movie to spend $10 on a horror movie, and that's a really cynical way of looking at it. But aside from that, and I know that plenty of people will comment, well, that's what Hollywood does, and that's all they were after. That's probably true. Okay. Artistically speaking, what is the point? Does this movie have anything new to say? Does it have anything new to offer anyone who is familiar with the original? Because the best remakes do.
Yep.
They exist independently of the original movie. Perhaps they add something, they comment on some new way, even on the original movie. This movie doesn't. It just, for the most part, is a bad imitation.
Yeah, and the stuff that they do change, and this isn't anything really with spoilers because it's the first scene of the movie. One of the things that they do change is they show this introduction of
yes.
Carrie's mom giving birth to Carrie. And
yes.
I thought that the scene was incredibly distasteful because, like, they didn't need it in the movie, the original movie, not that it should follow scene for scene, the original movie didn't have this scene. It looks like it's a real baby. It doesn't look like it's a animatronic baby
right.
or something like that. And they're holding, like, what looks like a real enough pair of scissors very close to the baby. And if you want to get me upset with a movie immediately, it's something like that, because I feel like the filmmakers are making transgressive choices that they really need to find a way to
right.
defend later. And they don't do that in this movie.
Well, and the issue with the scene is, A, yeah, I think you're absolutely right, that it's trying to right off the bat tell you, we're doing something different.
Yeah.
By including a scene that's not in the original film. Okay, sure. But then they don't really, I mean, that scene tells you that this movie is either A, going to be about Margaret White,
yep.
or be about very much the relationship between Margaret White and Carrie,
mm-hmm.
that she could have killed her when she was a baby, that she should have killed her when she was a baby, and it would have prevented all this evil. Okay, fine.
Yep.
But the movie, again, never really pays off on what is perhaps set up in that scene, so it just becomes this scene that's tacked onto the beginning to be something different.
Yeah, it's very odd. I don't like how they're playing this weird game where they're gonna show you something very transgressive from like a violent standpoint, mm-hmm. but then in a scene later where they show the girls in the shower and stuff like that, everybody's toweled up,
right?
They won't show anything with nudity,
right?
Which I'm not like a nude hound. I like seeing naked girls, of course, but like who doesn't? But I mean, like the way that De Palma shot it was just like, you know, this is going to be kind of exploitative and trashy,
right?
So just get ready for it. And the movie follows suit the rest of the way.
But right, like, well, because the whole idea of, yeah. you know, so much of it is it's this high school fantasy.
Yeah.
And then the way that the movie climaxes certainly turns that on its head. You know,
right.
That's the way he approached that movie, which yeah. is fantastic. This movie doesn't really have anything to say about high school or even really about bullying.
Yeah. I mean, like, I know that you know more people who are around high schools than I am, but right. Does, in your estimation from your talking to them or people who reacted to it, does this feel like a real high school to them?
Not any more than a lot of other Hollywood movies, okay. you know, yeah. certainly not in a way that justifies one of the major changes, because there are very few significant changes to yeah. the movie, is that they film throwing the tampons at Carrie, which is a very famous sequence, and upload it to YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I guess, the way that they say 2013, y'all.
Yeah.
Again, does it improve the material? Does it really modernize anything? No, it just says YouTube exists. And sometimes people do this.
Yeah.
And honestly, for me, and again, this is, you know, is this the movie's fault? I don't know. It made some of it tough to watch because we're just a week away, maybe not even, from a young girl killing herself
yeah.
Because of bullying. And so I'm watching this, and then I'm wondering, oh, so now is this a weird revenge fantasy? Am I supposed to be excited that Carrie's going to mm-hmm. show all these girls, like, this is what you get for being a bully? That's the wrong message. That is not the message of the original movie.
Yeah.
And we'll talk a little bit more about that when we get into more spoilers territory.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, like, I think they really had a good opportunity to do something with this movie, and it was just, it had the unfortunate circumstance of having to hit the Carrie beats.
Right.
Like, because I think Kimberly Pierce could make an interesting movie out of this material, but I don't know. Maybe just put up the YouTube video and not the pig's blood and the YouTube video and
right.
stuff. I
right.
mean, like, it doesn't right. need right. some of these Carrie elements. I think, like, if you just did the stuff that they were uniquely bringing to it and had some kind of focus on bullying, it would be a drama. It wouldn't be a horror movie.
Right. But ultimately, all you're then doing, and maybe this is worthwhile, but I have a hard time believing that it is yeah. like another school shooting movie. But with yeah. telekinesis at the prom instead of a school shooting.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, even the stuff they do with the telekinesis is kind of crazy, because they make it look way too kind of sheen and polished.
Right.
So she's levitating, which I don't even remember her doing in the old one.
No, she doesn't.
And she levitate. Puts, like, Judy Greer in the Anakin Skywalker chokehold.
Well, all right. So, at this point, I want to talk about some specific stuff, yeah. so... Again, we're going to talk spoilers. I'm guessing everybody's going to keep listening because we're not ruining anything. And
yeah.
I can't imagine why you would see this movie, which isn't to say it's a garbage movie. It's just, if you've seen the original, if you're a fan of the original, if you're interested in seeing the original, my feeling is see that one.
I think, yeah.
This movie adds nothing.
The original is so readily available, and right. it's a terrific movie. There's a lot of stuff in it that makes the horrific parts of the movie even more horrific and scary, because some of it is played so campy.
Right.
And so you're almost like, this is a high school comedy, and then something really dark happens, and
right.
it's so much more effective because of the juxtaposition. But yeah, I mean, like you were saying, during the first half of the remake of Carrie, I wasn't hating it. I hated it. Like, I hated the second half of the movie. So yeah. all in all, I mean, like, I really didn't like it.
Right.
But yeah, there's no unless you're a teenager and want to get together with your friends and go out and have a movie night, I don't see why you would go see this new one.
And you should just rent the original, yeah. Because again, it does things, it does everything better. I think the performances are better, the characters are better, it's scarier, it's more interesting. I don't think we finished talking about Julianne Moore. I didn't think it was very good. I don't know if I said this already. I felt like it was the way that a high schooler would approach playing that part.
Yeah, I don't know what she could have done. So, I mean, like, that's the thing that's tough is I didn't like what she did with it, but the interpretation that Piper Laurie had is such a tough act to follow.
Sure.
That I think going, it seemed like she was deliberately trying to go in one direction as opposed to the one that Piper Laurie did.
Piper Laurie's performance is so outward that Julianne Moore was really trying to turn everything inward, even when she encounters Sue Snell's mom, whereas in the original, it's very much Margaret White is sort of the aggressor. She's showing up, she wants to preach the word of the Lord, and instead here she's called out from the back of her sewing shop and
like dry cleaners.
She does repairs in the back of a dry cleaners, and she's everything's sort of under her breath. And one of the big additions is that she's a cutter. That now Margaret White cuts. Why this makes it scarier, I don't know.
Which is an insult to people who have that problem,
right? So not a fan of that performance. Okay, so now some more specific spoilery stuff, because I think what you were just talking about in terms of some dark things happening to me is very much personified, and where this movie does try to make changes and fails, to me is very much personified in that Judy Greer moment that you were talking about.
Yep.
Because one of the things that I would argue is great, you know, in sort of air quotes, about the original film is that Betty Buckley, as her PE teacher, Mrs. Desjardins or something. Is nice to Carrie White. She loses her temper with her in the beginning, and she's frustrated with her, so she's not a saint. But she is nice to Carrie White. She reaches out to Carrie White. She tries to help Carrie White. She's basically on her side. She's the one who punishes the girls who throw the tampons at her in the opening scene. And yet, during that prom scene, she dies along with everyone else because Carrie White, at that point, is not in control.
No.
And what the remake changes is that she basically is in control. And so now Judy Greer, who's fine in the movie, is nice to Carrie White, and so she is rewarded with her life. Carrie has a chance to kill her, changes her mind, sets her down, and Judy Greer gets away, because we in the audience don't want to see the character who was nice to her get punished.
Yeah.
And it completely dulls the impact, to me, of that whole sequence.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, you hit the nail right on the head with, in the original, all right, Sissy Spacek, the way she plays it is so much more creepy.
Yeah.
Then, and when you mention like how a high school person would play, Chloe Grace Moretz plays Carrie like how a high school kid would play Carrie in a school play,
with her power faces.
She's making power faces and she's doing a lot of contorting and like
she's conducting
posing.
It like it's an orchestra,
like a lot of posing and like, yeah.
And
she's
that's what it feels like X-Men, you know?
Yeah,
right.
It feels like X-Men. It feels like, you know, like when Tony Stark or like Tom Cruise in Minority Report are like pushing shit away.
Right.
But yeah, in the original Carrie, her eyes never blink.
Right.
They're just completely wide open. She looks inhuman. She looks spectral, like this weird, just bloody ghost, like Bloody Mary, just like coming to wreak hell. And to your point, she's, and like in the remake, they're kind of hemming and hawing with like the whole, is she imagining people laughing at her or not? But in the original movie, you can definitely tell that maybe two people are laughing at her, but everybody's in shock.
Right.
But she can't see that anymore.
Right.
Whatever was human about Carrie is gone.
Right.
She's just a pure just onslaught of these uncontrollable emotions mixed with deadly telekinetic powers.
Right.
And the way that it's shot, it's in this blood red tint, and it makes it so much creepier. It looks like you have just walked into hell.
Right.
And in the remake, it's still that Michael Bay gloss. It's still, everything looks pretty like a WB show in HD. And Then you got, you know, Chloe Grace Moretz doing her Famke Janssen playing Phoenix impression.
Right.
And then, like, letting Judy Greer get away and letting a lot of kids get away.
Right.
She kills full screen, though. You remember that? Like, how the kid showing her the telekinetic in the video? He's like, oh, if you press this button, it goes
full screen. Oh, he dies? How does he die?
He is shooting it with the camera. He's just like, I gotta document this. And he's got, like, his camera. So then she kills him because she, like, throws the camera, basically, at his face.
Oh,
and he
drops
it.
I sort of
but,
remember.
But, like, she's got, like, a hit list.
It's mostly the assholes who die.
It's like she marks the assholes.
Right.
And then they show the exterior of the school, which looks like
it's... And pretty much everyone got out.
It looks like pretty much everyone got out, but the building... There's no way anyone would have gotten out of that.
Right.
It makes absolutely no sense. And then, it's like, uh-oh, Carrie's coming to town like Godzilla, where she's, like, stopping by the petrol station and shit like that.
Yeah, well, again, because we get to Chris and Billy dying in a sequence that...
Fuck Chris and Billy in this movie.
Again, the way
the
way that it's handled in the original is kind of silly because of the special effect where the car flips and we get that shot of them spinning around and ha-ha-ha, whatever.
And
but,
it's so matter-of-fact. That's what's scary about the violence in that first one.
Right,
it's just, you don't think
it happens
about
and it's done.
It happens, it's boom.
Right.
And this
movie really lingers
on
the violence almost to a crazy degree because we get, again, it's 2013, we can do special effects, so let's do them.
Yeah.
So we get the slow-mo of their heads flying towards the windshield and Billy's face, you know, smashing and his nose being smashed and blood gushing out and he dies. But Chris doesn't, see? And that's where this movie, again, keeps trying to distinguish itself. It's like, we'll do the De Palma movie exactly, but then we'll do one thing different. So when the car flips, Chris doesn't die that time. She's still alive. And then Carrie levitates the car. And then, just to prove that Chris is really a horrible person, she tries to kill Carrie again by flooring the gas. And then her face goes through the windshield once again in slow motion.
Yep.
But then she's still not dead. She's alive for a few more seconds. And I'm thinking of John Malkovich in Con Air where he dies six times in a row. Like, let's let Chris die already. We don't have to keep killing her just because she's an awful human being, right?
Yeah.
This is how they distinguish themselves from De Palma's movie. But then they get to the end, and again, I could be remembering the book wrong. Margaret White in the book, the silverware thing was an addition for the De Palma movie, right?
I believe so. I read the book.
I feel like in the book, Carrie White basically like stops her heart inside of her chest. Like,
yeah, I just remember like doing the rocks coming down, and it wasn't as much fire.
Right.
And that's what happens in this one where it's more of just the house collapses. It's not like it's hellfire burning up alive. So.
But I just thought, once again, they're just doing the De Palma movie. And I understand why De Palma did it, because you need something visual. And they're trying to go again with the crucifixion metaphor. So this movie does the same thing again. They only distinguish themselves in these very small ways. Which brings me to the last shot. To me, the Judy Greer thing is what's wrong with the movie, again, because it doesn't understand what made the original work, which is that when Carrie flips out, it's horrible. It's horrible, and she's not in control of it. In this movie, it's a girl getting back the bullies.
Yeah.
It's not a girl who's been picked on just finally exploding against the entire world, not just the people who were mean to her. So we get to the last shot. So the original movie is very famous for this sequence at the end of the film where Amy Irving goes to visit Carrie's grave, a hand shoots out, Amy Irving wakes up and she's dreaming. And it's famous for two reasons. Well, it's not, it's famous for one reason, but there's another thing that we'll talk about. It's famous for being really the first movie that does, it ends on that crazy jump scare that every horror movie ever since chases. Friday the 13th most famously rips it off with Jason popping out of the water, but every horror movie ends on one last jump scare. But the thing about Carrie is, it's a dream. Sue Snell wakes up, and she's going to be haunted by this, by what happened to Carrie and what happened to everyone for the rest of her life. Yeah, that's the indication.
Yeah. Did you ever see, I think on TCM last year, they did a documentary about movies that Stephen King...
I saw it. I mean, I don't totally remember it, but
there was something, I think he was talking about Carrie. It might have been in that, if I'm misremembering. It's in some documentary where Stephen King is a talking head. He was talking about the response to the ending of the original Carrie. And he said that there were two gentlemen who were, like, really big guys, and they were screaming like girls when they saw that. And one turned to the other guy, and he goes, man, that girl ain't never going to be right again. And that is something that is so great about that last scene. Is right. It's not the hand that jumps right. out of the stones. It's Amy Irving's just completely mortified reaction. She's never going to recover from that. Right. Like, she is done. Right. So, I mean, like, whatever, you know, kids didn't die in that fire, the collateral damage is going to get them emotionally. And that's a super haunting way to end a movie.
Right.
Whereas in the new one, freaking Sue Snell puts on her Vicky Vale costume and, like, goes to the cemetery, sees Bruce Wayne putting the flowers on his parents' grave, and then, like, it says, like, Carrie White burns in hell, and then there's a crack in the grave, like, it's an indicator that that's, like, I guess she might come back because right. she's, you know, like, still has telekinetic powers underneath the ground.
And again, this is everything that's wrong with this remake, is that it does exactly what the De Palma movie does, but it tweaks it just a little bit in a way that makes it worse.
Right.
And so we get the dream sequence, but it's not a dream. We get the sequence of Sue Snell putting the flowers on the grave, and then we get the one last ha thing, and instead of the hand popping out, it's the gravestone cracking. But A, it's not a dream, mm-hmm. so it takes away this idea that Sue Snell is going to be haunted forever, because it's not for the benefit of Sue Snell. She's not there.
Yeah.
It's happening. We're supposed to.
Oh, yeah, she wasn't even.
She's
there
not there. That. So it's not about her being tortured by this for the rest of her life. Yeah. It's just for the audience,
yeah.
And it's a way of saying, it's Freddy Krueger. It's like, I'm not gone. I'm not really dead. I'll be back, guys. And all of a sudden, like, Carrie White is Freddy Krueger. Carrie White is somebody, again, we're supposed to be sort of happy that, like, oh, good, she's going to be back, and she's going to kill more of those bullies. Like, it's everything that's wrong. Carrie White is not the anti-hero or sort of the cool bad guy that last scene makes her out to be. That's not who she's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's trying to reproduce something that the original movie did, tweak it a little bit for 2013, but it throws up all over itself right. in the worst way.
One thing that I feel like I just have to point out too, especially to people who are detractors of the original Carrie, is watch the two of them back to back.
Mm-hmm.
And you will see a really strong authorial voice from a filmmaker in one movie, and a magnificent score in one movie.
Mm-hmm.
The piano score in the original Carrie, and the photography and the choices De Palma makes, make it so much creepier than it is, even as a book. I think it works better as a movie than even as that book.
I agree.
And then in the Kimberly Pierce version, I don't know, she gets all this credit about being this feminist director, and maybe it's from Boys Don't Cry, I don't know. But what, Boys Don't Cry is a scary movie compared to Carrie. It's a lot scarier movie than Carrie is.
Yeah, it does a lot of what I think she wanted to do with Carrie way better.
Yeah.
Way better.
It's kind of back to, like, the Sam Raimi Oz, he already did it with Army of Darkness
right,
thing.
Right, exactly.
It's like she kind of made her little right. sort of Carrie movie.
Right.
But whatever voice Kimberly Pierce has is completely sucked out of this movie, except maybe in, like, an individual scene here and there with
right.
Judy Greer and Chloe Grace Moretz. Like, when it has just, like, two good actors in a scene together, with the exception of Julianne Moore's performance, which is kind of off, it seems to know what it's doing, and it's okay. It's fine. It's not as good as the other one, but it's
right, the best it can achieve
it's
is
fine.
Right?
Yeah.
Inoffensive.
But the score in this movie, and I don't usually notice music in movies unless it's really good or really bad. I notice this is really bad. It's the most generic thriller score I've ever heard. There's so many scenes in this movie that would have been so much more effective if they just didn't have any music to it.
Sure.
And they are really pumping the thriller score, like, right. during, like when she's throwing her mom in a closet and all this stuff, and it's just like, what the fuck is going on? Like, what are you doing? I don't even, like, it seems like they found some, give me a name of like a score program on like MacBooks or something. Know,
right, right.
Yeah, it's like that's what it feels like. Yeah. It seems like they just pressed, oh, it's number 7 for this scene.
I don't feel like I even noticed the score. I noticed all the indie rock, which I understand, you know, it's 2013. They got to have all the indie rock on the soundtrack. Mm-hmm. The thing is, like, if you don't like, we're obviously huge fans of the original Carrie. If you don't like the original Carrie, that's fine. Like, I still can't imagine you liking this one. Maybe you would, because I suspect a lot of the people that don't like the original film, a lot of it has to do with De Palma's choices. So the things that we're saying, like, yeah, a lot of strong authorial choices in the way that the camera works. You know, like I said, I read some people saying, like, oh, I hate all that split screen shit. Like, okay, fine. I happen to really like it, so I really like the original Carrie. If it's De Palma's choices that are getting in your way, maybe you'll like this one, because it's basically De Palma's movie without all of those interesting things that he did.
But I'm going to tell... All right. More so than ever, I really just want people to have their opinions and almost keep it to themselves. I'm happy when people have their own opinions. I think if you're going into Carrie 2013 and saying that's a better movie than Carrie 1976,
yeesh,
I'm as close to as I'll ever say of this, you're just wrong.
Yeah.
Like, you're not, your opinion is wrong. I'll give you another example. All right. The first appearance of John Travolta in Carrie.
Yeah.
You know everything about that guy in the first 30 seconds of him being on screen. A lot of it has credit to do with John Travolta was a very interesting actor back then.
Right, and how interesting, too, that wasn't choices. He doing Welcome Back, Kotter at the time?
Yeah, he makes a lot of great choices. He's a hayseed. He hits Chris in the face a lot.
Right.
He drinks while driving.
But he was a TV star. Like, he was a heartthrob. And that was his movie that he made, that he's this asshole who beats his girlfriend. That's interesting.
Yeah. And doing that allows you to do a lot of other things, because in that 30 seconds, we get Billy,
right.
What's his name?
I can't remember his last name.
Yeah, you get him. You understand, like, this is that guy.
Right.
Whereas, there's so many scenes, like, as Carrie goes along with, where I'm watching, like, the guy from Chronicle, one of the guys from Chronicle plays Billy in this one.
Oh, I didn't even realize that's who that was.
Yeah, and you're still kind of, like, trying to, like, he's killing a pig, you're still trying to figure out, who the fuck is this guy?
Right.
And it gets in the way of this story that they're telling.
Right.
And I'm sorry, you might not like stylistic flourishes from Brian De Palma. I have problems with it in some of his movies, too. But he's great working with actors. He's great in the first Carrie. There's a lot of interesting things happening that you're not necessarily maybe thinking about if you think it's a bad movie.
Well, and I think there's a lot of, again, not to just keep comparing them. As a fan of the 76 movie, I think there's a ton of interesting characters that people create in a very short amount of time, including Billy, including even PJ Souls, including Sue Snell. I think interesting characters, interesting performances, people that stand out. So if you don't remember PJ Souls' character, you're still like, oh yeah, the girl with the baseball hat.
Mm-hmm.
And in this movie, even Billy, who's kind of a major character, just fails to register at all. Sue Snell, aside from being blonde and pretty and being a main character, fails to really register in any way. Chris, Orange Chris, really, again, aside from playing Chris, fails to register in any real way, whereas Nancy Allen in the original movie really stands out, like really creates an interesting, awful teenager.
Even PJ Souls in the original Carrie, I mean, like, yeah, she's the girl with the hat, but like, she makes interesting choices even with the hat. Like, in the first scene of the movie, they're playing the original Carrie, they're playing volleyball.
Right.
And she's really bad, and Carrie's really bad at playing volleyball.
Don't worry, they bring back volleyball for the remake.
Yeah, but it's in a pool.
What?
Pop, we got budget.
We did something different. Yeah. See, it's not just De Palma's movie.
God. So, PJ Souls, when she's walking into the school, she hits Carrie with a hat.
Right.
She hits her in the face with the hat.
Right.
This girl, and that tells you everything that you need to know about that character. This girl hates Carrie White so much that just calling her, like, telling her to eat shit is not good enough. I have to physically hit you because the sight of you bothers me so much.
Right.
And in this one, who her counterpart is, I don't know, girl who looks like Demi Lovato.
Right, right. Yeah, I don't even know. Like, I don't know who that girl is.
What is this girl?
Right.
Who is this girl?
So, when you're faced with a remake like this, or a remake like Evil Dead,
yeah,
which would you prefer?
Evil Dead.
Yeah, I kind of would too, right? Even though Evil Dead
went for it.
Right. It might be a worse movie on its own. Yeah. Again, I don't think Carrie is good at all, but it's competent.
Mm-hmm.
But it's utterly generic and indistinguishable, yeah. And Evil Dead at least tries to be its own thing.
Yeah. Not to put you on the spot, but yeah. I'm going to name a horror remake that is much loathed, that I think is actually good.
Okay.
And I want to see what you think, not just of this, but like if you have one.
Okay.
I think that Prom Night with Brittany Snow is a fine thriller. I think it's very suspenseful and it's not bloody, but I have
never seen it.
I think it's fine.
I was confusing it with Sorority Row.
I did not see Sorority Row.
Which I did not like.
Okay.
I have not seen Prom Night.
I don't think that, well, my point
is, I don't love the original Prom Night, though.
I haven't seen the original Prom Night, so I don't know. Maybe, yeah. Like, if you've never seen Carrie, you'll right. love Carrie exactly. for the reason that I like Prom Night. But,
right, right.
I mean, like, yeah, most of these remakes are bad, but every once in a while, you'll have, like, one that's got something kind of interesting going
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
And I don't think the remake of Carrie is even as good as the remake of Prom Night.
Yeah, I couldn't say, but...
Yeah.
I mean, I like, you know, I'm on record as having
maybe
a lot
I just
to like.
To snow more.
I'm on record as liking a lot of things about like Rob Zombie's Halloween, and you can't find a remake that's more hated than that movie.
I bought that for $5 at the Music Box of Horrors yesterday.
You made the right call, my friend.
Boom.
You made the
right call.
I also
bought Halloween 4 for $5.
Oh my gosh. That's like a pretty awesome $10 that you just spent.
I know. I'm very happy with it.
Congratulations. Mm-hmm. Anyway, don't see Carrie, guys. You won't get anything out of it. All that you could do is compare it to the original and say, I like the original better.
Yep.
There's nothing to get out of it. So way to go. That was the year's last horror movie, I think, that we're getting.
Yeah, unless Last Vegas is scary.
There's a lot of good stuff coming out next year, though, in theory.
Yeah, like what? Well, you mean horror?
Horror.
What are some of the things that you're thinking of?
The Sacrament.
Oh,
Ty West has a new movie. Eli Roth has a new mm-hmm. movie. Mm-hmm.
I'll throw this out there real
some
quick.
Other people have new movies that I can't think of right now.
I lucked out and stumbled upon that the Chicago Film Festival was doing a screening of The Sacrament. So I saw that yesterday. It is really, really good. Very scary. So definitely look out for it. It'll probably be on demand before it's in theaters.
Yeah, so wait for that instead of going to see Carrie. Anyway, keep leaving your entries for the Scary Movie Challenge. We got a couple weeks left of October, everybody.
Yeah, keep pumping away.
Thanks, Adam.
You're welcome. Hold on, I'm going to try to do my Crypt Keeper laugh. All
right.
Because it's Scary Movie Month, after all. All
right.
All right, let me see if I can still do this. It's this movie! Yeah.